We consider what we can see, hear, smell, taste, touch, or what we can feel with our body, whatever we can see with our senses, hear, smell, taste, touch, or with the mind, what we can feel, emotions, or with the intellect, what we think, or our thoughts. And these are the only things we give reality to. And so all of mankind is busy in solving these problems. The physical scientists, physicists, chemists, they deal with the material world. The psychologists, psychiatrists deal with the emotional world. And then the thinkers, the philosophers, professors deal with the world of thoughts. And that's what they teach. But then there were these spiritual giants, spiritual scientists that we call as rishis, who thousands of years ago realized that just solving these problems are not going to solve all of mankind's problems. We see that, you know, no matter how comfortable a home you have, you mentally everything is going good, you have your knowledge is good, and then something comes to disturb it. Maybe ill health of yours or a near one, some emotional problem, you know, in the family, or and then some confusion meant intellectual, and then the mind, which was stable, then gets disturbed. And the masters tell us that the only way to go beyond all sorrows, whether it's physical, emotional, intellectual, is to know thyself. They say, know who you are, know your true nature. All of us are that Om, that infinite Brahman. All of us, every one of us, all plants, birds, animals, everything is that one Brahman appearing in different names and forms. And once I know that I am that, that is my true nature, that is who I really am, that is the only way, the one and only way to get out of sorrow. Until then, we will continue to have problems. We will continue to have difficulties, and problems come in everybody's life. If nothing else, old age will come, you know, and it's bound to the aches and pains and all. Once you realize that I am that infinite reality and I have this body, mind and intellect, and the body is undergoing some pain, the mind is some stress, intellect some confusion, but that's not me, that's my equipment. And that is the goal of the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, all the spiritual texts. And that's what Bhagavan Sri Krishna also tells us in the 6th chapter. He says, you know, aham apyena sarvatra samam pasyati yorjuna. So seeing himself in all, sukham va yadi dukham va, he is not disturbed. Sa yogi paramo mataha atma apyena sarvatra samam pasyati yorjuna. He says, one who sees himself in everybody, and everybody in me, and that one consciousness, then joys and sorrows do not affect such an individual, and such is a true yogi. That's what he had told us in the 6th chapter. That is the benefit of meditation. And then Arjuna had asked questions. We already talked about that. One was about how to quieten the mind, and Bhagavan answered with abhyas and with vairagya, practice and detachment. And then Arjuna's second question, which shows that he's still at the level of the body, even though his questions are evolved, he still thinks this life is this body. He says, when I drop this body, and if I have not reached the highest, what will happen to me? And Bhagavan says, kaschit api, never, you know, this one who has done good karmas never gets disturbed. There is not an iota of loss to him. And then he gave two kinds of individuals, one who is doing good actions with desires. And he says such a person goes to heaven, Shuchi, and then he comes back to the home of Shuchi Nam Shri Matam Gehe. People who are wealthy and who are pure, good people who also have money. So if you have desires and you have done a lot of good karmas, you will go to heaven, you will stay for a long time. Long period of time, Shashwati Sama, that's what Bhagavan calls it. And then he comes back, and there he can continue his journey, but his life is relatively comfortable. So like being born in America, where most of us have all the comforts, and our children grow up with those kind of comforts. But how about the second one, the one that is most dear to the Lord? He says, one who does actions without any desires, he does good deeds not with the idea of getting anything, or people should praise me, or I should become, you know, famous, or I should get heaven. Not even heaven. He doesn't even have a desire for heaven. As soon as he drops this body, he wants to come back quickly. He said, I don't want to spend 1,000 years in heaven. For what? No, I want to continue my journey. So Bhagavan says, Athva yogi nam eva kule bhavati dhimatam. Such an individual comes in the house of wise yogi, where he can then continue his journey. And he says, the moment he contacts this knowledge, then he starts putting effort. Yatato hi bhuya. Again, he starts putting the effort. He says, last life, if I had a few more years, I would have reached. So I don't want to waste time. I want to keep moving. And to describe what happens to this individual, Bhagavan has given us 4 or 5 shlokas. So we'll continue what happens to this individual once he has come to this earth and is living in the house of yogis. So verse number 44, chapter 6, verse 44. Purvabhyasena tenaiva. Priyate hyavashopi saha. Jignyasurapi yogasya. Shabda brahmati vartate. Together. Purvabhyasena tenaiva. Priyate hyavashopi saha. Jignyasurapi yogasya. Shabda brahmati vartate. So he says that such an individual who has come back to earth and in the house of yogis, and he has contacted this knowledge. Maybe he went to some lecture, or some he was passing by and he heard some words of the Bhagavad Gita, or some Mahatma talking on Upanishads, or he went to the library and came across this book and he started opening. He said, this looks very familiar. What is this knowledge? And then he connects with that very quickly. Tatratam buddhi sanyogam. Last week we talked about labhate paurvadehikam. From his previous birth, the knowledge comes back to him very quickly. And what happens to him? Purva abhyasena tenaiva. So by that, purva abhyasa, he has already done this practice before. He already had this knowledge before. And that knowledge comes back to him. As we have said before, he still will have to study A, B, C, D, and, you know, 2 plus 2 is 4, and A for apple, B for bat. But the spiritual progress that he has made, it's not that he'll know Sanskrit right away. He'll have to go through all that. But the moment he comes in contact with this knowledge, he remembers. So, purva abhyasena tenaiva. And what happens to him? Riyate. Riyate means he gets kidnapped. He avasho, as if unwillingly, without any control. He has no control. And it seems like something is taking him. He doesn't know what. He doesn't know why he feels so attracted. Why is he going back to that Mahatma to listen to lectures? Why does he start reading that books, those spiritual books? He doesn't know. He says, why am I doing that? It's like there is some unknown force that is pulling him. Saha. So this individual gets pulled, gets as if kidnapped, as if held prisoner, because he can't escape. He wants to. He wants to go in the world and enjoy, but his mind tells him, no, this is not your purpose. This is not why you are here. And what happens to this individual? Jignyasu api. Even a person who has some curiosity or some desire to know yoga, this yogasya, once this individual gets this desire, then what happens? Shabda brahma ati vartate. Shabda brahma. He crosses shabda brahma. That's a lengthy word, has a lot of meaning, so we'll talk about that today. Arti vartate means he very quickly crosses over Shabda Brahma. So he has, from previous practice, something is pulling him. So as we said, previous practice, as we said, he has already studied the scriptures before. He has done some karma yoga. So his vasanas are virtually none because he has done karma yoga. Maybe he has done a lot of puja. He has studied the scriptures from Mahatma in his previous birth. And so having minimum of vasanas, obviously to take birth, you have to have some residual vasanas, but he has minimum of vasanas. So very quickly he progresses in this life. And we have seen examples of Raman Maharishi, Shankaracharya Ji, Buddha, Jesus Christ, who at a very young age gave up everything and decided to go on the spiritual path. And he's as if kidnapped, as if he's held prisoner. He doesn't know, why am I being pulled that way? It's like somebody's taking him by force. It's not force like physical force, but mentally he feels so attracted to this path. And he says, I just can't resist it. So talking about prisoner reminds me of a story. So this man was put in prison for 5 years or something for robbery. And so he was in this row of prisons. There was a whole row of, there were 10, 12, you know, cells, and he was in one of them. And all the prisoners would be talking, and then suddenly one would say, number four, and they would all start laughing. He said, why are they laughing, number four? And then next day somebody would say, number 11, and everybody would start laughing. So he said, why? He asked the neighbor cell, he said, why are you guys laughing with the numbers? He says, see, we have been here many years, and you know, all of us knew was 20 jokes. So we have all memorized the 20 jokes. Instead of telling the whole joke, somebody says number 4, and we all know, so we start laughing. Somebody says number 11, we start laughing. So then he also memorizes all the 20 jokes because he's nothing else to do. After a few weeks, he says number 6, and nobody laughs. He says, number 6, nobody laughs. So he asked the neighbor, why is nobody laughing? He says, because you didn't tell the joke properly. There's a style of how to tell the joke, the punchline. So that's what happens to this individual. He gets imprisoned. He gets caught as if kidnapped. And what happens is that whatever our strong vasanas are that we died with, whatever the predominant vasana, that is where we go. And it could be both ways. It could be a person who had negative, lot of negative vasanas, but somehow was born in the house of good people, but he had this strong desires to, you know, to indulge or enjoy or whatever criminal tendencies. And even though his parents will take him to the temple and take him to this knowledge and all that, or try to teach him, but if that desire is very strong, suddenly out of nowhere this desire will manifest and he will go on the wrong path. And parents say, you know, what did I do wrong? You know, maybe I should have done this. And mother and father are blaming themselves. It is, they tried their best, but this individual had such strong negative tendencies that they overpowered him. So he was as if kidnapped by these tendencies. And also on the other, most of the time, it is the evolutionary tendencies. It is the good tendencies. And that's why, like Ratnakar, you know, that dacoit, everybody knows, you know, he met Naradji and he became Valmiki. Why? Because even though he was doing criminal activities, he had this strong desire to know spirituality. He was murdering people and all. But the moment he met the guru who gave him the right knowledge, he transformed and in a few years became one of the greatest sages. He wrote the entire Ramayana in Sanskrit. So the evolutionary tendencies are usually stronger. And we find that people who are very involved in materialism and just interested in making money, and something happens, maybe they get a blow, you know, in their life. Financially they suffer a loss, or some, you know, family member, or some emotional, and that triggers, you know, a vairagya, the detachment. And that is number one thing. If you want to progress in spirituality, we have to develop vairagya. Vairagya does not mean you give everything up, but you do not depend on things for their happiness. You keep it in their place. Yes, I need this. If I have it, good. If I don't have, I am still good. And so that ability to be able to detach mentally, physically, you could still work in the world, like Janak Maharaj and so many other great, you know, we had so many kings who were also great rishis, and they continued to function in the world, but their mind was always on the Lord. And it says that we have as if a magnet attached to the Lord in these individuals. See, what we do is we all have this little magnets that can be attached to the higher, but what we do is we attach our magnets to the world, looking, you know, thinking, looking for happiness, as they say, in all the wrong places. We are looking for happiness, and so we hold on to these small things with our tiny little magnet. They say attached to this giant magnet, the universal magnet, Bhagwan, the Lord. And once you do that, then the grip will be so strong that you won't be able to get out, even if you want to. So that's what they say, attached to that. And such an individual, wherever he may be in the business, he may be in some industry, or he may be in the office, or he may be a householder, or he may be, but the moment this desire comes, this longing or this call comes, nothing can stop that individual. And what they say is that it is a remembrance. It is not something new, even though he may have in this life heard it for the first time, but he has a memory of that. It's like there's a chip, you know, memory chip in his brain. And he says, I remember, I've heard this somewhere. See, you have never heard this. No, I have. So from previous life, the memory comes back to him. So that's what they say. It is a remembering. It is not new knowledge. And such an individual develops profound restlessness. He said, so people say, what happened to you? Everything was going fine. And now suddenly you have no interest in materialism. You are running after all these sadhus. Maybe they have hypnotized you. Everything was fine. And what happened? He said, no, everything was not fine. Now everything is fine, because now I have found what I was looking for. See, people always tell all these, and they are worried, my son, if he becomes a sadhu, then, you know, who will take care of me in my old age? Bhagwan will take care of you. If your child is interested in this direction, encourage them, let them go. There is nothing wrong with it. It is the best thing they can do for themselves. And the story of Jad Bharata, most of you know, but if anybody doesn't know that story, I can tell it briefly. Has everybody heard that? Okay, I can tell. So Jad Bharata that was his name. Later on, there was a great rishi who was meditating, very evolved and very close to realization, enlightenment. He was sitting by a river bank in deep meditation, and suddenly he heard the sound of a deer drinking water. And then he heard the loud roar of a lion, and that deer was pregnant. And she delivered the baby in the water, and she ran away. You know, she was so scared. So he saw the baby floating, and he thought, oh, this poor baby will die. So he brings the baby deer out and starts taking care. And there's nothing wrong. You know, the baby came to him, and he got her some milk and got some food and grass and all. And the baby deer started growing. Up to there was okay. But then he became very attached to the deer. You know, where is my deer? And he started calling it my deer. You know, this is my dear deer. You know, where is this deer? And he hasn't come back. Maybe some lion ate him, and what happened? And so within a few years, he dropped his body, and his last thought at the time of death was deer, instead of thinking about Bhagwan, as what Lord says, that whatever your last thought is, that's where you go. And so he was born next life as a deer. But because he was so spiritually evolved yogi, he remembered. He said, I was a sadhu and I made the mistake of getting attached to the deer. And so whatever 5, 10, 15 years of life as a deer, he lived and, you know, finished his life. And then he had to continue his spiritual journey. So Bhagwan put him in the house of humans again. And this time he said, I'm not going to get attached. Last time I got attached to the deer, I'm not going to get attached to anything or anybody. So he stopped. He wouldn't even talk. From the time he was little, he refused to talk. He could talk, but he wouldn't talk. And people would ask him question, and he would act like as if he's dumb, you know, he doesn't know anything. He would look at them blank look, and he was not attached to his parents, his brothers, nobody. And so people started calling him Jad Bharat. Jad means dumb. So he's a dumb guy. His name was Bharat. Jad Bharat, that's what they started. He won't talk. It was like mentally, you know, he was challenged. That's how he was acting. Even when he went to school, they put him, and he had no interest in studies, no interest in friends, nothing. He would just sit in one corner and just be in his, because he was reveling. He was in that meditative state. So finally, his parents died. His older brothers used to mistreat him, make him work like a servant in the house because he wasn't doing anything else. They said, you work. So he used to clean the house, do whatever. You know, he was a great yogi, but whatever work comes, he said. So one day he was walking in the fields, and there was this king going on a palanquin. You know, four people were carrying him on that palki. And it so happened that one of the four got sick. And so they saw this Bharat walking around, you know, healthy young man. They said, hey, come here. So the one of the guys says, come here. He says, yes. He said, carry this palanquin. The king is in a hurry. He wants to go meet some sadhu. He has to meet him today. So come on, hurry up. So Bharat said, okay, I have to carry. So he starts carrying and he's walking. But see, he was so evolved that he didn't want to step on any insects. And in the forest, a lot of insects. So he would be watching, he would move, then he would step. If he saw insect, he would jump over. And obviously the king was getting disturbed because one of the four is acting crazy. He says, what's wrong with you? You have a healthy body and you can't even walk. I'll punish you severely if you don't listen. So he puts the palanquin down. He says, sir, king, I don't have the body, neither you have the body. We are not the body. We are that eternal self. This body is our equipment. And I know you are a king and I'm an ordinary person, but do not be in the ego of that I am a great king and all, because sooner or later this ego will get you down. I know you are going to go meet a Mahatma, so go with some humility. So he gives, and the king gets shocked. He said, who is this guy? He's talking about Atma and self and Brahman and all. And the king gets shocked. He comes down from the palanquin, bows down and says, I'm so sorry, you know, I didn't realize. And then he sits at his feet of this Bharat and asks. And so this is the first time Bharat has spoken in this lifetime. And he gives a beautiful discourse to the king. And the king says, I don't need to go see any Mahatma. I found my knowledge. He tells his, you know, let's go back. And Bharat leaves. And that's it. And nobody sees him again. So the point is that this knowledge is never wasted. And it always continues. And then Bhagavan uses the word Shabda Brahma Ati Vartate. He crosses over Shabda Brahma. What is this Shabda Brahma? So there are three or four meanings in different commentaries. One is in the Vedas, the first two portions, the mantras and the brahmanas, deal with rituals and deal with the world. So rituals promise certain rewards. You know, like I said, if you do these deeds, you go to heaven. So he crosses over those parts. He has no interest in rituals. That is one Shabda Brahma. Shabda Brahma also means words. So whatever we are speaking are words. Whatever is written in the Bhagavad Gita, whatever is written in the Upanishads, the Bible, the Quran, they are all words, and they are words, human words. So human words cannot express that highest truth, even though we are trying in this to study it. It is only when you go beyond the words, because the words are still at the level of BMI, when you go beyond the words to the truth that is indicated by the words, that's called Shabda Brahma Ati Vartate. He crosses over the words to the indicated meaning. One is the regular meaning of what we are talking. Other one is Lakshyartha. Lakshyartha means what is the Lakshya, what the words are indicating. So using the information in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Upanishads, we go beyond the words to what is indicated, what is called Om, what is called Atma, what is called Brahman. That is the second meaning. The third meaning of Shabda Brahma is Om itself. Now Om is written O-M, but actually it is A, U, Ma. A, U, and A and U in Sanskrit becomes O. with the sandhi rule. So om, but it is a uma. And a represents the waking state, u represents the dream, and ma represents the deep sleep. So these are the three states, the Mandukya Upanishad, which Vimalji is doing. Some of you have heard, it covers that very well, very in lot of detail. And the CD is available in the office if you would like. So these three states, the waking, dream, and deep sleep, are what we go through every day. You know, we are awake, and then we go to, at night we go to sleep, and then in the sleep we dream, and then we wake up. So we go through this waking, dream, deep sleep. But they say there is a fourth state, which is called Chaturtham, which is called Turiya, which is the state of enlightenment. And it's not really a state, but Turiya is the Atma, the self, the consciousness, the Brahman, which supports the other three states. I am alive because Om is in, you know, functioning through me. The Om, the consciousness, is functioning through my mind and intellect. And that is why I am going through the waking, dream, and deep sleep states. But it is the consciousness which is the reality, which is the substratum on which these three states are superimposed. They are playing upon that. So one who knows this knowledge, he goes beyond the waking, dream, and deep sleep to that substratum, which is indicated by Om. That's why in the 8th chapter, Bhagavan says, Om ite kaksharam brahma vyaharan mam anuswaram yat yav prayati tyajan deham tato yati param gatim. So one who chants Om at the time of death, when he's leaving this body, then he reaches the highest, because Om is one akshar, it is one word which indicates that highest reality. And the highest reality is not in the chanting of Om, but in the silence between two Oms, when there is silence, because the sound emerges from silence and merges back into the silence. So that silence, in that silence, you experience the substratum or the support from which all the three states, so that is Om. And Shabda Brahma also means instructions. So like the Vedas have instructions, like you are in Brahmacharya, you know, you finish your studies, then you become a grahastha, a householder, then a retired vanaprastha, and then a sannyasi. So you are four stages, so 25 years. But for this person, those in, even the Vedic instructions do not apply. Straight away from Brahmacharya, he goes to sannyas. He doesn't even sometimes finish his studies. Like Raman Maharishi didn't even finish his studies. He directly went to sannyas. Shankaracharya ji took sannyas at, you know, 8-10 or so. So for them, the Vedic instructions do not apply, because the Vedic instructions say you should take care of your parents when they get old. Vedas say if you have that much desire, you are free. We do not give you any instructions. You don't have to take care of your parents. The Lord will take care. That's why Shankaracharya ji left his mother, and that's why Buddha left his, you know, wife and a newborn child. It's not for everybody, but somebody who has this much strong desire, then the Vedas say you have no bondage. As far as we are concerned, you are free to go. And so these people go on the fast track. You know, when you go to LA or San Francisco, you see this fast track where these cars go rapidly, and you and I are struggling in the, you know, the traffic jam. And why? Because these people have their credit card, they are prepaid, and so rapidly they go through. So similarly, we are given a choice. Do you want to go on the fast track, or you want to go on the slow track? And most of us choose the slow track. You know, I want my wife, I want my children, I want my house, I want my jewelry, I want my car, I want my job. Along with that, you know, slowly we'll learn, what's the hurry? You know, I have a whole life. Aram say, you know, after 65. But there are some others who are on the fast track because they have prepaid. You know, they have done all this. They have done in previous life. They have finished with all the family and circumstances. They say, forget it. You know, they are straight going, so they are moving very fast. So we have, all of us have a choice. Do you want to be on the slow track, or you want to be on the fast track? You want to be on the local train, or you want to be on the express train? In India, when we grew up, they used to be. So, and what for us, another important point is that It is very important to give our children this knowledge. And people say, you know, we did, when they were little, we used to take them to Bal Vihar and they used to chant all the shlokas and they knew all that. And suddenly, now they have become teenagers, they don't even talk to me and they have gone to college and they don't at all do. It was all a waste. You know, I spent so many Sunday mornings or whatever, you know, took them to the temple and took them, taught them all this. They say, no, nothing goes waste. This knowledge, sooner or later, it will resurface. Once you have given them these samskaras, nothing is lost. So it is our duty as parents to make sure that we give them in whatever form, whatever way, but this knowledge of who they are and who is God has to be given to everybody. So that they then, when they come in contact with this knowledge after college or whenever, they will also progress. So that is this essence of this verse, that this person very quickly progresses and goes beyond all worldly achievements to the highest.